From the home of the Codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park Podcast.
This is MC Fontaine welcoming you to another Bletchley Park Podcast Extra. This week we have the first of a two-part talk given by Bob Horner. It's called Malta, George Cross, 1940 to 1942, The Battle for Survival.
Welcome to Bletchley Park and the first of our winter lecture series. I'm Bob Horner. I'm a volunteer guide at Bletchley Park. I have a background which was, I worked for a bank, but I did also 30 years in the Royal Naval Reserve, where I specialised in command and control procedures for submarines. And in addition to doing a little bit of local lecturing, I also lecture on cruise ships. This evening I'm going to look at the island of Malta, the story of how it survived repeated attacks and blockade by the Axis forces. And this talk is going to cover the period from June 1940 until the end of 1942. Now, when the war started in 1939, Malta was, of course, a British colony. The governor and commander-in-chief was General Sir Charles Bonham Carter, who'd been appointed in 1936. The actress Helena Bonham Carter is his great-niece. Relations between Malta and Italy deteriorated as a result of Italy's invasion of Ethiopia in 1936. Mussolini's axis with Germany, the 1936 Treaty of Friendship and Alliance, was reinforced in Berlin on the 22nd of May 1939 by Ribbentrop and Ciano. And the new treaty, quickly renamed the Pact of Steel by Mussolini, was for 10 years and committed Germany and Italy to each other in the event of war. However, Italy would need 3 years to rearm fully, and on the advice of Ciano, Mussolini wrote to Hitler, who ignored the appeal and didn't reply. Of course, this wasn't known outside the Axis, and the pact made the people of Malta feel even more vulnerable. By the mid-1940s, Malta was one of the most densely populated countries in the world, with 275,000 people, a density of 2,250 people per square mile, and it is still the world's eighth most densely populated country. It's roughly equidistant between Gibraltar and Alexandria, and Allied aircraft based there could cover Axis routes between Italy and North Africa. That was the good news. The bad news was that Malta was only 20 minutes flying time for Italian bombers from Sicily. And whilst this was clearly a potential threat to the island of Malta, Mussolini declared Italy to be non-belligerent following the outbreak of war in September 1939. So, 60 miles away was Sicily, a part of Italy and aligned by ideology and treaty to Germany, but not, for the moment, at least a participant in the war. In June 1940, France surrendered, and Mussolini, concerned at being completely overshadowed by Germany, declared war on the 10th of June. Let's look at Malta's defences. Probably most people would associate the Royal Navy with Malta, and it was headquarters of the Mediterranean Fleet until just before war broke out in 1939. By then, the fleet had been moved to Alexandria as a precaution against assumed Italian air attack. Remember that at the time, Britain didn't know that Mussolini wasn't going to join the war if it started. So, with the possible exception of light forces, no warships were based at Malta. There was, of course, some coastal artillery, including seven of the ubiquitous 9.2-inch guns and 10 6-inch guns manned by the Royal Artillery and the Royal Malta Artillery, respectively. Let's look at the relative sizes of the Royal Navy in the Mediterranean and the Regia Marina at the moment that the Italians joined the war and the French had been defeated. The Royal Navy had worldwide commitments, so the situation in the Mediterranean made the Royal Navy the underdog, well, on paper at least. Although starting to build aircraft carriers, Italy had been content to rely on a land-based air umbrella from Italy and Libya. The Italians mainly operated from Taranto and Naples and many smaller ports, Bari and Brindisi in the Adriatic, La Spezia in the Ligurian Sea, Cagliari in Sardinia, four ports in Sicily, and Tripoli and Tobruk in Libya. In the autumn of 1939, the army garrison was quite small, consisting of about 4,000 men, the core of which was the 231st Infantry Brigade, known as the Malta Infantry Brigade. Initially, there were four British and one locally enlisted battalions, together with Royal Artillery, Royal Malta Artillery, and other army support, and specialist units that one would routinely find attached to an infantry brigade. territorial battalions of the King's Own Malta Regiment were being raised. The vast majority of their effort was to defend Valletta's two harbours, the east coast and Marsa Sirocco Bay in the south. It was considered that the rest of the coast was reasonably secure due to cliffs. I've already mentioned shore defence batteries, but the army was also responsible for anti-aircraft defence. In fact, at that date, there's still only being 34 heavy and 8 light anti-aircraft guns in place. Air raid shelters for military and civilians alike were also in short supply because various pre-war schemes had been turned down by the British government as being too expensive. Vehicles were painted in a stone wall camouflage scheme. The virtually treeless islands are covered in dry stone walls. This scheme was also extended to steel helmets. Let's now consider Malta's air order of battle, starting with airfields. By the time that Italy joined the war, there were 3 operational airfields on Malta, with the tarmac strip at Lucca just complete, but only becoming operational on the 28th of June 1940. In addition to the RAF airfields was a Royal Navy Fleet Air Arm base at Califrana, which was also used for flying boats by the Royal Air Force. The air defence of Malta in the early days of the war with Italy was the stuff of legends, and, as with legends, the facts can sometimes get in the way of a good story. The story centres around some Gloucester Sea Gladiators. Now, the Gladiator was Britain's last biplane fighter. It entered RAF service in February 1937, and, having been totally eclipsed by monoplanes of the RAF and the Axis, was withdrawn with less than 5 years' service life in January 1942. Generally, aircraft with the word sea in front of or incorporated in their names were aircraft designed to operate from land, but which were adapted to fly from aircraft carriers. By early 1940, there were no RAF fighters at Malta. 4 squadrons of Hawker Hurricanes had been promised, but the fall of France meant that they were retained for use in the Battle of Britain. In April and May 1939, a batch of 24 new Sea Gladiators arrived in crates at Malta. Some were sent to Alexandria, others equipped 802 Squadron Fleet Air Arm, which embarked in HMS Glorious, but the remaining 6 or 7 were stored in crates at Califrana Airfield. In March 1940, it was realised that a fighter flight was needed, but, apart from a few RAF Swordfish torpedo bombers configured as seaplanes and useful for air-sea rescue only, and a few minor aircraft used for target towing, there were no other aircraft on the islands. There were occasional visits by London or Sunderland flying boats from Gibraltar and Alexandria. The RAF asked to borrow some of the crated gladiators, and at least 5 were assembled and sent to Halfar to form the Halfar flight under squadron leader Jock Martin. There were no fighter pilots on the island either, but several pilot-qualified officers volunteered. They could fly the aircraft, but had to teach themselves fighter tactics. In April 1940, HMS Glorious left Malta in a hurry to dash to Norway and her tragic sinking in June. She left behind some of her gladiators, and these were added to the Halfar flight. Later in April, the morale of the flight was shattered when the Navy reclaimed its aircraft and they were crated up again. Within days of this happening, the order was rescinded and 6 aircraft now formed the flight. 2 had been involved in accidents on the same day, and 1 good aircraft was made from them. At 6:49 a.m. on the 11th of June 1940, the first Italian bombers took off from Catania on Sicily to raid Malta, and 3 gladiators flew to the island's defence. This will be the highest number of gladiators that the people of Malta will ever have seen in the air at one time, and the aircraft collectively became known as Faith, Hope and Charity. All these aircraft were involved in the battle over the next months, but in the first weeks, 19, 20 and 31 had the lion's share. And I've not found reliable multiple sources that agree when the names were bestowed on individual aircraft. They came, of course, from St. Paul's letter to the Corinthians, St. Paul having been shipwrecked on Malta in AD 59 or 60. The raid was the first of over 3,300, and 10 SM-79s attacked Valletta and Halfar, causing only slight damage. These 3-engined aircraft could only carry a small bomb load. 1 was shot down by the island's anti-aircraft gunners, and they damaged another aircraft. As for the gladiators, they pitched into the battle, but without success. Even flat out at 253 miles an hour, their speed was slightly inferior to the SM-79s. and escorting Mach-E 200 fighters could achieve 313 miles an hour. There were seven more raids that day, the total effort being about 40 bombers and 12 fighters. In one raid, Flight Lieutenant Timber Woods shot up one of the escorting fighters, which descended quickly with black smoke coming from the aircraft. It was assumed that the aircraft had crashed into the sea, giving the morale boost of the flight's first kill. Post-war analysis has shown that the smoke was from pilot officer Pasola's hasty opening of the throttle to make his escape. At the end of the first day, 11 civilians, including three young children, six members of the Royal Malta Artillery, and six Maltese naval personnel lay dead, and about 130 people, mainly civilians, had been injured. The raiders flew at about 15,000 feet, and with the short warning of the raids due to Malta's close proximity to Sicily, the gladiators did not have enough time to gain height to effectively attack the formations. To address this problem, rather than run to the cockpit when scrambled, the pilots sat in the cockpits in the blistering heat. This solution helped by giving the aircraft 2,000 to 3,000 extra feet of altitude before intercepting the enemy. A make, do and mend policy gradually affected the whole flight, as the scratch ground crew, also volunteers, became more and more resourceful to keep the aircraft flying. This included cannibalising the remaining unconstructed aircraft and fitting engines from Blenheim bombers discovered in the stores. Parts of a swordfish were grafted onto one gladiator. The daylight raids continued, particularly on the centre of Valletta, causing more death, injury and damage, and the population started to move to the country or to construct underground shelters. The first night raid started on the 21st of June, when there were four raids in 3 hours after midnight, including one on Gozo. The flight had its first success on the 22nd of June, when Flight Lieutenant Burgess later awarded the DFC for three confirmed and three probable kills, and Flying Faith shot down an SM-79 off the south of the island. At the end of June, relief arrived in the shape of five Hurricanes. They were part of a batch earmarked for the defence of Alexandria and had flown there via France and Tunis just before Italy had entered the war. Air Commodore Maynard, Air Officer Commanding Malta, lobbied Air Chief Marshal Sir Arthur Longworth, Air Officer Commanding Middle East, to let him have some. This was clinched by a letter from the acting governor and commander-in-chief, Sir William Dobie, to the War Office. Incidentally, Dobie had been in post since April the 24th, relieving General Sir Charles Bonham Carter, who'd been invalided home following a heart attack. He did not return, and Dobie was confirmed in post in 1941. The car pennant beside his bust in the Imperial War Museum has a shrapnel hole in it. The Hurricanes were led in by a Lockheed Hudson, which had earlier shepherded them all the way from the UK to the Middle East. Within a short time of their arrival, they were fighting alongside the gladiators. On the 2nd of August, the first major reinforcements of fighters arrived. 12 Hurricanes with underwing long-range fuel tanks, escorted by two Fleet Air Arm Skuas acting as navigational guides, flew off HMS Argus from about 450 miles west of Malta and landed safely on the islands. Open-ocean navigation in single-seat aircraft is fraught with problems, hence the use of guide aircraft with a dedicated navigator. This was Operation Hurry, and it set the standard for future reinforcements. However, it was not without risk, and in a repeat operation, White, in November, only four of the 12 Hurricanes arrived. The others ran out of fuel, being launched too far west. Fortunately, this was an unusually high attrition rate, and by the end of October 1942, a variety of carriers had ferried 765 aircraft, mainly fighters of various types, of which 720, that's 94%, arrived safely. At the end of June, the Halfar flight moved to the new airfield at Lucca, and it was there that they were joined by the five Hurricanes. On the 2nd of August, the Gladiator and Hurricane flights were formed into 261 Squadron Royal Air Force, but not before Gladiator N5519, Charity, had been shot down on the 31st of July, inflicting severe burns to pilot officer Peter Hartley. He was evacuated to the UK for treatment and is said to have flown again. The battle was coordinated from the underground war rooms at Lascaris in the heart of Valletta. They were extended in readiness for the invasion of Sicily. The Italians threw more aircraft into the battle, including Alcyone bombers, and on the 29th of August, 10 of them bombed Lucca airfield. Now, the Alcyone, which translates as Kingfisher, was a more accurate bomber, carrying his bombs horizontally, as on Allied aircraft, instead of vertically, as on the SM-79. On the island, people sheltered in underground in old railway tunnels. The meter gauge system, built in 1883, had closed in 1931, but that didn't stop Mussolini from proclaiming that his bombers had destroyed it. The population also sheltered in the catacombs and dug shelters in the rock. Some articles of artistic or historical importance were stored underground, but many more weren't and were destroyed. The population also formed a home guard, demolition and clearance section, special constabulary, and the King's Own Malta Regiment eventually grew from 1 to 4 battalions. The intense Italian air activity, not forgetting that of their navy, made Malta far more difficult to supply, and when Italy declared war, the convoy system was instituted for supplies by sea. By the end of the year, 7 convoys had arrived without loss, bringing 25 ships. The low average number of 3.5 ships per convoy will partly reflect the logistics of discharging. The smallest convoy had 2 ships, the largest 5. Even so, this wasn't enough, and in early February 1941, the decision was made to introduce a coherent rationing scheme to replace local ones. Cards were issued on the 7th of April, initially only for sugar, matches, soap and coffee. By August, lard, margarine, edible oil and kerosene had been added. Despite the air raids, the Royal Navy needed to have more local forces, so on the 1st of September, the 10th Submarine Flotilla, disbanded in December 1919, was reformed at Malta. It operated from HMS Talbot in Lazaretto Creek. This flotilla had an amazing record. An ominous development was the transfer of German aircraft from Norway to Sicily. Flieger Corps 10 were specialists in coastal operations, and their role was to command the skies and attack any ships that could interfere with Axis shipping to and from North Africa, which would shortly include German troops. Decrypts of Enigma messages at Bletchley Park first disclosed the move, and on the 27th of December, air intelligence warned the air staff that attacks on the Mediterranean fleet must be expected. Goodness knows what went wrong, but the Admiralty had not passed the warning to Alexandria before the aircraft carrier HMS Illustrious was attacked on the 10th of January whilst escorting a convoy to Malta. The carrier was damaged, and the cruiser HMS Southampton was sunk the following day. HMS Illustrious managed to reach Malta and was made seaworthy during continual air attacks, known as the Illustrious Blitz, before sailing to Alexandria on the 23rd. After further repairs there, she was sent to the US Navy Yard at Norfolk, Virginia, for a refit and modifications. The next naval reinforcements arrived in April 1941, when the grandly named Malta Striking Force, the 14th Destroyer Flotilla, in the command of Captain Mack in HMS Jarvis, was formed in Valletta. Comprising 4 modern destroyers, 2 J-class and 2 tribals, they were quickly in the thick of it, and on the 16th of April they destroyed an Axis convoy of 5 ships and its Italian destroyer escort. In the action, HMS Mohawk was torpedoed, and she was later sunk as an abandoned hulk by HMS Janus, standard operating procedure in that situation. In the air, Flieger Corps 10's Messerschmitt 109s, with their experienced pilots, were proving more than a match for the fighters on Malta and their exhausted pilots. The Sea Gladiator Hope had been destroyed on the ground in February, so that left 3, and the Mark I Hurricanes were never normally a match for the faster Messerschmitt. Unfortunately, it would not be until March 1942 that Spitfires started to arrive on Malta. From April 1941, the good news was, at least, that delivery of fighters by aircraft carrier was working, and after a long gap, the remnants of the 16 Hurricanes safely delivered in October and November were now being reinforced by Hurricanes delivered by HMS Ark Royal and HMS Furious, which would each fly off up to 24 at a time, plus guide aircraft. These became known as Club Runs. Since the start of the war with Italy, there had been a steady build-up of British troops on the islands, and by July 1941 there were over 20,000 in 3 brigades and their support. In addition to their anti-invasion role, the garrison were involved in general patrols, keeping the streets clear of rubble, keeping air bases operational, constructing aircraft pens, and providing personnel for manhandling and rearming aircraft. By August, the anti-aircraft barrage in Malta consisted of 112 heavy and 118 light guns. There was also some relief for Malta in the air, because many of Sicily-based Flieger Corps 10's aircraft were transferred to Crete to replace Flieger Corps 8, which had gone to Russia. I've been talking about air defence and the need to supply fighters. Crucial, but a build-up of heavier aircraft also started. The reason for these aircraft was not defensive. It was to use Malta's location to take the war to the Axis, in particular convoys between Naples and Tripoli, initially to reinforce the Italians, but then to carry Rommel's Africa Corps and to supply it. The British had very good intelligence on these convoys. Bletchley Park was breaking the enigma of the German Air Force daily, and that was carrying air-to-ground or air-to-sea cooperation messages. After a long time of failure against German naval ciphers, Bletchley Park was frequently breaking them from June 1941. The park therefore got a very good picture of the convoys and their schedules, though that aircraft or warships could be tasked against them. A scourge of the British in the Mediterranean was an Italian commando frogman unit, Decima Flottiglia MAS, or the 10th Assault Vehicle Flotilla. Initially they used chariots, the so-called human torpedoes. These weapons were ridden by two frogmen and were designed to attack ships at anchor. In 1941, they tried another method, using one-man explosive boats, and attacked HMS York and merchant ships at Suda Bay, Crete. York was damaged beyond repair. The boats were small and fast, and the driver would escape in a capsule after aiming it at the target. In June, they turned their attention to Malta. A raid using several one-man boats, two chariots, and two of these 10-man torpedo boats was planned for the 26th of June, but was cancelled due to bad weather. On the night of the 25th and 26th of July, six merchant ships just arrived in convoy from Gibraltar, Operation Substance, were in harbour, and the Italians attacked. Fortunately for the British, the raiders were picked up on radar some way out. That was apparently a possibility which the Italians hadn't considered, there being little radar in their navy. Accurate British gunnery from shore, aided by the RAF, destroyed the attacking force. The Italian Air Force provided support, and one Hurricane was shot down. The pilot bailed out and saw one of these torpedo boats bobbing about in the water. He climbed on board and found all eight crew dead. He hoisted a white flag and was later picked up. Resupply of Malta by convoy was working, and by October 1941, 56 ships had sailed for Malta in 17 convoys, and only two ships had been lost. In addition to the convoys, several submarines ran supplies, starting in the summer of 1941. In particular, one of the only three large Thames-class submarines, HMS Clyde, was specially fitted out for the role by the removal of one battery. This operation became known as the Magic Carpet. In 1942, HMS Clyde transported a lot of mail and even had a special Royal Mail Jolly Roger. For the Admiralty, it was imperative to put even more effort into attacking Axis convoys, which were resupplying North Africa. Fuel supplies were now seen to be adequate, so Force K arrived in Malta. At its inception, the force consisted of two cruisers, Aurora and Penelope, and two L-class destroyers, Lance and Lively. The ships were quickly in action, and on the 9th of November, Force K attacked two escorted convoys in the central Mediterranean east of Sicily. The Italian destroyer Fulmine and 10 merchant ships were sunk. The Malta-based submarine HMS Upholder of the 10th Flotilla joined in and sank the Italian destroyer Libeccio. The heavily decorated Lieutenant Commander Wanklin was already in line for a Victoria Cross, which was gazetted on the 16th of December, for a variety of successes starting in May 1941. He lost his life with all his men when Upholder was sunk in April 1942. On the islands, an adverse effect on morale was the cost of living. By November 1941, it was up 75% in 2 years. Wages had risen by 35%. To attempt to redress the balance, certain key goods were subsidised to reflect pre-war prices. Suddenly, the tide turned against the British. Flieger Corps 2 arrived in Sicily in November to recommence the aerial bombardment of the islands. In the western Mediterranean, HMS Ark Royal was torpedoed by U-81 on the 14th of November, and in the eastern Mediterranean, the battleship HMS Barham was sunk by U-331 on the 25th of November. This explosion frequently turns up on television documentaries, not always in relation to Barham. By now, Germany had 11 submarines in the Mediterranean, and Enigma decrypts from Bletchley Park revealed that another 14 to 16 were on their way. Force K had been reinforced by Force B of two more cruisers and two more destroyers, but disaster struck on the 19th of December when ships of both forces entered a minefield when pursuing an Italian convoy. The cruisers Neptune, Aurora, and Penelope struck mines, as did the destroyer Kandahar. Neptune sank, and Kandahar, whose back was broken, was dispatched the next day by the destroyer Jaguar, sent from Malta. Force K was disbanded. With the turn of the year, Malta was facing a terrible blitz. Deliveries of fighters had stopped after HMS Argus and Ark Royal, the day before she was torpedoed, flew off 37 Hurricanes on the 12th of November. The next delivery was on the 7th of March, when HMS Eagle and Argus delivered 15 Spitfires, the first on the islands. The Spitfires were tropicalized and had many modifications, including huge air intake under the engine. April saw the climax of the blitz, with many buildings destroyed and few serviceable aircraft left. It is only with hindsight that we know that April was the climax, and on the 14th, the 10th Submarine Flotilla evacuated Malta following a devastating air raid directly on its base at Lazaretto Creek. Some boats went to Gibraltar, the others to Alexandria. The following day, the King wrote to the Governor, Sir William Dobie, to bestow his personal award of the George Cross to the island of Malta. This is, of course, our highest award for gallantry, equal to the Victoria Cross, which is not available to civilians. Incidentally, this award was never published in the London Gazette. It remained the only collective award until 1999, when the Queen awarded it to the Royal Ulster Constabulary. In April and May, the United States Navy lent a hand with deliveries of Spitfires when USS Wasp participated in two deliveries. Within 90 minutes of the arrival of the first batch of 47 Spitfires, 17 had been destroyed on the ground and 29 more were damaged. That means one got away. The second batch of 64, in a combined operation with HMS Eagle, made all the difference and coincided with an easing off of the Axis raids. I've concentrated a lot on the Royal Air Force Defenders, as most references do. However, we mustn't overlook the coordinated contributions made by the anti-aircraft gunners of the Royal Artillery and the Royal Malta Artillery. The German generals quite rightly felt that Malta had to be taken to give them secure lines of communication to North Africa. Much planning was done, which would include an airborne assault from Sicily. Not for the first time, German intelligence overestimated their successes, and Flieger Corps II issued a heavily flawed intelligence appreciation of German successes in Malta until the end of April 1942. Despite earlier ratification by Hitler and Mussolini, Enigma decrypts from Bletchley Park quickly informed our commanders that invasion could be discounted. On the 7th of May, the exhausted General Dobie handed over to First World War hero General Viscount Gort, VC, who'd been governor of Gibraltar. He brought Malta's George Cross with him and quickly handed it over for safekeeping, but it will be several more months before it was formally presented. Talk about a poison chalice. Gort arrived to an island still under relentless air attack, where food and fuel was running low and water was supplied from standpipes, rationed for daytime use only.
Next week, we'll have the concluding part of this talk, where Bob will look at Operation Pedestal, which has gone down in military history as one of the most important British strategic victories of the Second World War. Thanks for listening. Why not follow our channel on Audioboo, where you can also subscribe to the RSS feed, or you can subscribe to us in iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter, where we're at @BParkPodcast, or join the Bletchley Park Facebook group. And of course, we must thank Audioboo, who make this podcast possible.